This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates, and watch us on Free Speech TV Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. A video of a white man screaming insults at a female employee of Starbucks in Miami has gone viral. The man yelled at the woman of color, quote, "You're trash, you're garbage, you're complete trash," and added, "I voted for Trump," as well as, quote, "You lost." Such incidents are not new, of course. What's new is that Trump's name is being invoked alongside the abuse. While hateful incidents like this are extremely disturbing, so are figures like former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who has come up as a candidate for a prominent position in a Trump government. Giuliani championed the racial profiling policy known as Stop and Frisk in New York, which Trump has also defended during his campaign. Meanwhile, leaders of the Black Lives Matter Global Network just released a statement in response to Trump's Electoral College wins, saying, quote, "Our mandate has not changed. Organize and end all state-sanctioned violence until all Black Lives Matter." Joining me now is Rosa Clemente, a community organizer, active with Black Lives Matter, a freelance journalist, the 2008 Green Party vice presidential candidate, and currently a doctoral candidate in the W.E.B. Du Bois Department of Afro-American Studies at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and a news correspondent for this program. Welcome, Rosa.
Thank you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, let's talk about the hateful incidents, the hate crimes and abuses that have been taking place since Trump's election. I mentioned they're not new, but some are indicating that it's a serious uptick. And of course, what is new is Trump's name being used by these abusers. As far as you can tell, is this a new level of abuse that we're facing, or is it just that we're noticing more? Are you hearing of any things personally that have happened to people in your community?
It's not new, but I think that the level and the openness of it is going to be something we probably haven't seen in our lifetimes. Because it's happening in mass, right? It's not like one or two incidents. It's a lot every day, everywhere. And I think the most worrisome part of it is that a lot of it is coming from middle school kids, which, that's the home that they're coming from. There's something being said in the home that gives rise for them now to be emboldened in middle school to chant, "Build the wall," or tell people to go back to Africa, or all of these things that were deemed socially unacceptable, but now have been normalized. So I think it's pretty horrible what is happening to anyone who's a victim of verbal violence. We haven't seen the incidences yet of physical violence at the same way, but of course those will rise as well as it begins to set in for one side of, and all those that voted for Trump, that they have every right, obviously, they have every right to do whatever they want. And us merely fighting to exist as people of color, particularly, will be seen as something that we should just not be doing, that we should just be okay with what is happening. Right. I'm in upstate New York. And so people might have seen last week that there was a Little League playground where there was a swastika and said, "Make America White Again." That's Weeksville, New York, Wellsville, New York, excuse me, which is less than a half an hour from where I live. But I knew everybody up here for the most part in this part of New York State outside of New York City. I mean, Trump Pence signs were up like 20-1. And there were already things being said in these communities that kind of gave people up here an indication that Trump was probably going to win if he was winning much of upstate New York in the hearts and minds of those people.
Wow. Now, what about also the fact that we are seeing these very, very troubling figures being picked by Trump to be part of his new cabinet? I want to specifically focus on Rudy Giuliani, a former New York City mayor who championed the stop and frisk laws. The stop and frisk was eventually essentially taken down out of New York, was challenged in court, but Trump wants to bring it back nationwide. And with any kind of appointment he gives Rudy Giuliani, he's essentially legitimizing bringing this sort of policy all across the country. Can you tell us or remind those of us, you know, particularly outside New York, who didn't experience firsthand what Giuliani did? What does Giuliani represent?
I mean, Giuliani represents the worst in terms of using power and public policy to institutionalize white supremacy with the help of the police throughout all of New York City. So before Giuliani was mayor, he was part of a group of police officers and law enforcement figures who descended on City Hall when David Dinkins was our mayor, a black mayor, where he led sustained protests of people chanting the N-word to the mayor at that time. He then became mayor. And under Giuliani, organizers, activists, we called it Giuliani time. It wasn't just stop and frisk. There was not one issue of police brutality that he would never side with the cops with, beginning with the murder of Anthony Bias and continuing with Amadou Diallo, Adnor Louima, Patrick Dorisman, and the names go on and on. In fact, his security detail, before they were his security detail, were cops that were that murdered Hilton Vega and Anthony Rosario. And those are just some of the cases of you know, that we organized around. I lived in the city while Giuliani was mayor. And, you know, I only call it racial profiling. It was really racial terror and racial surveillance that was happening in our communities. So to imagine him first being Secretary of State or Attorney General or any part of this administration, it's hard to imagine, but it makes total sense because the administration to me looks like the Third Reich looked. Like, you know, if we were in a time warp and all went back to Nazi Germany, they would be on right. These folks would be standing right next to Hitler, literally.
Right.
And I think people really have to understand that. At like, they would be standing side by side with Hitler. They would be his enforcers, his essential. Again, they would be part of that Third Reich. Excuse me. So just that figure alone, let alone all the other names, and that Steve Bannon is the closest advisor. I mean, probably has more influence than a Reince Priebus would have, which is still problematic. And the normalization of white supremacy is what we are seeing, not just at an institutional level, but the normalization of it as a cultural touchstone for all of those that believe in what Trump is about.
And Donald Trump, during his campaign, talked about winning over African-American voters. And the way he did it was to clean up the inner cities and have a law, you know, have the enforcement of law and order. I mean, these are all code words, right, Rosa? I mean, he basically made it seem as though because African-Americans are the victims of violence of all sorts, and of course, a lot of coded references probably to his quote, black on black crime, that he was going to save the inner city by what? Unleashing more cops, more violations of people's civil rights. I mean, just what we've had under Obama and Democratic administrations has been killing communities, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and then he's also, to this day, says that the Central Park Five are guilty, and those were five young men accused of a crime that they didn't commit, forced to confess, spent many years in jail, were fully exonerated when the guilty party came forward, or that the police finally couldn't hide the entire making up of these five young kids. But what happened with the Central Park Five also set the tone in New York for a Giuliani to come in, even a Bloomberg, to have this racial surveillance very super normalized, not only in our communities, but in schools where many elementary and middle school kids in New York City have also been subjected to police violence or even having police in the schools. So, yeah, I mean, this is who the president is, and this is what his cabinet is going to look like. And I think other cities need to prepare for what is coming. I mean, certain cities, New York, LA, at certain levels, Seattle, Chicago, these are big cities. They've been dealing with these on a mass level. You know, it is part and parcel of, if you live in these cities and you're an organizer, that is part of what you do every day, organizing against. That's one of the political things we're doing. But, you know, other cities have to prepare, because this is coming down the pipeline to everywhere we reside, including Black and brown people that reside in rural communities. And I think we need to have a serious discussion on that narrative, because I live in what would be considered upstate, rural, the North Country. And there are many African American and Latinx working class people here suffering at economic levels that I think people in big cities don't even understand. So to rural communities as well, where we reside in, are actually more scarier, because these local police actually always operate from a place of a racial surveillance terror plus power with no checks and balances.
Rosa, I want to turn to the way in which Black Lives Matter has changed the narrative, or attempted to change the narrative, over the past couple of years. And we just heard, by the way, that the officer involved in the killing of Philando Castile has been charged with manslaughter, not first or second degree murder, but manslaughter. Still better, of course, than being completely acquitted or not charged at all. What is your comment on the fact that this a charge has actually come up? And what do you make of the Black Lives Matter Global Network statement that was put out in response to Trump, which is basically, you know, we're going to keep doing what we've been doing because our communities have always faced this sort of terror?
Well, as it regards the indictment, I mean, obviously it's not enough, and I'm not one to ever believe that we are ever going to get justice from the justice system. While this indictment has happened, we also have potentially Dylann Roof, maybe the judge is looking to see and is already indicating that he may have him placed but that he will be deemed mentally incompetent, which means he won't stand trial for the complete competent action that he took by killing those folks in South Carolina. And we also have had a hung jury on the officer who killed Sam Du Bois, right? And now Walter Scott, I think that trial has started or is going to begin. So I don't see anything coming out of it. I completely see that cop walking off on even the manslaughter charges. And even if he didn't, maybe the judge will feel bad for him, like the judge who let the cop go who killed Akai Gurley. Even though he was convicted, the judge said he didn't deserve that much time and would lower his sentence dramatically. So I don't really understand at this point how any organizers or activists can think we're going to get anything from the justice system. I don't see it. And we're going to have to really buckle down on organizing and supporting these families in the long haul outside of the court system.
On the Black Lives Matter statement, and I want to quote from this, it's a powerful statement. It's not very long. One of the things that I think is one of the most important parts of it is in the months leading up to this election, we have demanded support from white people in dismantling white supremacy, a farce that persuaded some to believe we were living in a post-racial America while simultaneously rolling back the rights of black people and other people of color. White supremacy fortified the decision to disregard racism racism, sexism as serious variables in the outcome of this election. So, Rosa, how important is it for us to pay attention to the statement? Because it seems as though a lot of people who were out in the streets marching against Trump may have been okay with the status quo, right? And as if they're just now discovering that people in our communities are facing horrific violence.
Yeah, I mean, I love the statement put out by the leadership of Black Lives Matter for all of us who support and are in the network, are active or organizers. I think it's right on point. I think really the larger question is, what is wrong with white folks? Like, what, you know, even so-called allies, because obviously you haven't been doing the work necessary to dismantle white supremacy. You've been gentrifiers in our community collectively, you know, which has caused so much of state violence to be perpetrated against communities of color. I mean, and I say this as many, all of us have white folks in our life that are kick-ass, anti-imperialist, put their bodies on the line. I think we're talking about collectively, there's a reckoning that needs to happen within the white community. And even those who have been supporting Black Lives Matter, like, that's not enough anymore. Being a supporter is not enough anymore. Being an ally, wearing a safety pin. No, white people have to go seriously, not only into the communities, they have to have a large national or set a national narrative of what whiteness means, what it looks like, what the privileges are, and how they're going to dismantle that from the bottom to the top. Our job as Black and Brown folks is to be in our communities now and organize at levels that we never even thought was possible, to focus on local organizing as we always stay in tune with what's going on nationally, to stop depending on the justice system. And it is not our job in 2016 and beyond at this moment to assuage or soothe white guilt or white pain, maybe to even have conversations at this point. The burden of Black and Brown organizers was intense before Trump. Now we are in protective self-defense mode. We have communities that are already setting up self-defense squads in case massive deportations start to happen or massive more attacks on Muslim people. And I think that's exactly what we need to be doing right now.
Rosa, I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us and for reminding us of that broader context that I think has gotten lost in this week and a half since the election. Thank you for all the work that you do.
Thank you, Sanaa. Thank you for all the work that you're doing for all of us once again. Thank you so much.
Rosa Clemente is a community organizer active with Black Lives Matter. She's also a freelance journalist, and she was a 2008 Green Party vice presidential candidate. She's also a doctoral candidate in the W.E.B. Du Bois Department of Afro-American Studies at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and a news correspondent for our show. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can sign up for our newsletter at risingupwithsonali.com to get daily emails with links to all our stories. Thank you so much, Rosa. Really appreciate it.